You're a thinker.
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Boben Van der Har?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And we have Jim Bowen with us from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. If you would come up for the invocation, and then we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance right after that.
Father in heaven, you have called these women and these men to lead in the city of CUNA. And we've come tonight to begin by asking that you will guide in this meeting tonight and all the decisions that are made, that it would be made for the best interest of the people of CUNA. Guide them as they carry out the decisions to know how to best and most efficiently make them work for the city. You've called us as citizens on this earth to lift up our leaders, and we do that tonight. And we ask that you would be with us during this meeting, for Jesus' sake. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The first item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Any items you want to pull for discussion or comments or motion to approve?
All right. If nobody has anything, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you pull the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Ruben Van der Har?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. That brings us right to a public hearing. A public hearing and consideration to approve 18-07-AN annexation and 18-05-ZC rezone for Thistle Farm LLC and Bodo Farm LLC. Sam Weiger.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, Sam Weiger, Planner 1, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho. The applicant's attorney, Mr. Jeff Bauer, emailed via the city clerk a letter addressed to the mayor and city council regarding this application. Upon advice of the city attorney, the letter was not forwarded to the mayor and city council, but instead delivered to planning and zoning to staff this matter. The letter raises a legal issue and demands that the city attorney prepare a memo for the mayor and council. The letter also demands that Mr. Bauer's letter and the city attorney's memo also be presented at the hearing, only be presented at the hearing. The posting procedures were not met as required by CUNA City Code 5-1A-8. Upon advice of the city attorney, staff would like to advise the mayor and city council that they do not have jurisdiction to hear the zoning matter. And since zoning is necessary upon annexation, that both the zoning application and the annexation application be reset and the applicant be directed to post and proceed accordingly.
Okay.
So is there a date that you're asking us to reset it, like next meeting or farther out?
It would not be next meeting because we would have to get the
postings
correct. And we're working on the date currently.
Okay, so.
So since there is no posting that was done correctly, we don't need to do a time certain, is that? Okay, I would assume that we have some folks in the audience that came for that hearing, is that correct? So I think just, I mean, I see that the applicant isn't here, so apparently he knew this wasn't happening, but I don't think it's fair for them to come and not have some kind of an idea of when there, we're going to.
There will be a new legal notification going out in the mail. It has to start over from the beginning as far as legal notifications and posting.
So can you tell us the absolute earliest they could expect it? So if they wanted to be checking agendas in case they didn't get a mailing but they still are interested, they would know when?
We're shooting for the first one in May.
Okay.
The 7th.
Tuesday in May.
So it would be no earlier than May 7th would
correct.
Be the earliest date that it would be back on for public hearing. So if you guys, if you didn't previously get a mailing that said this is when the public hearing's happening, if you check the KMN usually has it, but you can also check our website for what's on the agenda. The agendas are posted the Friday before. So the earliest it would be is May 7th, but it might not be May 7th. It might be after that. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure y'all have the ability to figure out when it is and that sort of thing. Okay. So apologies. Can you tell us again what motion you are seeking from us tonight?
To table case 18-07-AN and 18-05-ZC.
Okay. And then to no date certain,
to
right?
Date certain.
Okay. Does that cover it for you, too?
Mr. Gigray.
Yeah, Bill Gigray, city attorney, mayor and members of the council, I believe you'd want to follow your normal process, which I believe planning and zoning or the city clerk, through the city clerk, resets this, I think, for the schedule of set. Would that be the normal course I think you'd follow? Planning and zoning would reset it then, and you would authorize them to do so.
Okay. So I move we table the public hearing in consideration to approve 18-07-AN and 18-05-ZC for Thistle Farm LLC and Bodall Farm LLC to a date to be set by planning and zoning pursuant to their normal procedures.
Second. Motion is made and seconded to table 18-07-AN and 18-05-ZC and to reset the date by planning and zoning and their regular procedures. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. And yeah, go ahead. Just if you would just come up, state your name and address for
the record. Yeah.
I am Debbie McMullen. I live at 3800 West Hubbard Road, Kuna, Idaho, which is I'm directly impacted by that. What we're not discussing now anymore. My question was, who do I find out about traffic impact? Because that's a dead end street, and there's no. The only place that does not have a four-way stop or a light all the way from 10 Mile to Shinden is that street. And that's
yeah.
where they're talking about putting all those. Has a traffic impact study been done?
Yeah, so we really can't get into any of the details on that. And so none of that information will be provided. However, at this stage of the process, a traffic impact study is not required until they do their initial plat.
But she could come in and chat with planning and zoning about, like, when traffic impact studies are required and kind of how that whole thing works with that. I mean, if that's what the question is, okay.
Yeah.
Would that work?
Yeah, it's just that you're on a dead-end street, so I don't know if they're going to open it up to Black Cat or if the only access is going to be at the only road that doesn't have a four-way stop on it.
Yeah, I come in and chat with planning and zoning because they should be able to tell you, yeah, what kind of maybe what's expected, or if not, hook you up with somebody at ACHD that could tell you more about, like, what the master plans say, if that's going to go through or
yeah.
whatever.
And my other question would be for the when you reset this meeting, you know, I can get that information then, but I was like, what about the traffic?
Yeah.
So thank you. I appreciate you letting me ask that one question.
Yeah, you
thank
bet.
You.
Thank you. And we apologize that this is going to drag out some more.
That's the way it works.
At least we got to it quickly. Sometimes it takes a lot longer.
let's see. What's my place?
We're at 7.
Item 7A. We have an update on economic development from Lisa Hahn, our economic development director. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, members of the council, Lisa Holland, Economic Development Director, for the record. I'll keep mine somewhat brief tonight, too, so you'll probably get out of here early so you can go home and enjoy your evenings. I included for you just a brief memo in your packets, along with some slides. that I've been using just to kind of talk about CUNA when I've been out and meeting with folks. I used these slides when I talked to the chamber a couple weeks ago. This just kind of highlights some of the growth, the demographics, the statistics of kind of what's happening in CUNA, what we'd like to see. If there's any questions on that, certainly happy to help answer those things. The only other thing I wanted to, I won't go through it all in detail unless there's any questions, but just a couple highlights I wanted to point out. As you all know, we've talked about this before, but there's certainly a need for more commercial and industrial sites with infrastructure if we want to be attracting some of the larger companies. There's a lot of projects that are looking at the Valley in general, a lot of manufacturers, a lot of shared service companies or back office, which are some of those kind of office users where they have HR, finance, IT, accounting, those kind of roles. There's a lot of them looking at the Valley, but CUNA hasn't been able to compete for a lot of those because we just don't have a lot of the sites ready to go with the right zoning. So with that, you know, the other challenge is a lot of companies, if they do come in and they say, let's say they want 20 acres for a project, when you say, that's great, here's a number of sites that have 20 acres, but none of them are zoned correctly, they're all ag or they're all whatever it is that needs to go through a process. They don't want to hear, you can have the site, but it's going to be 4 to 6 months first to rezone it, and then we'll start it on the plat process, and then we'll start on the building design. So it's just been kind of challenging. I think CUNA has a great chance to attract light industrial food processing, especially with our proximity to rail. Some of the biggest challenges, again, is infrastructure and proper zoning in some of those sites. So thinking about ways that we can help overcome some of those infrastructure challenges, especially if you look at all the areas that we've identified in the future use map for the new comp plan that will be rolling out. There's some infrastructure challenges with those, having the right sewer, water, roadways, some of those kind of improvements that would be needed to attract those industrial users at some point. So some of the financing tools that, you know, we've been doing a lot of research on, I put together a matrix that kind of explains the differences between three different tools that are commonly used by cities. One's urban renewal districts, one's business improvement districts, and one is community infrastructure districts. And I apologize, this was not in your packet, so I'm going to hand out a copy of it for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know I got Chris a copy earlier. So again, I don't need to go through it all in high-level overview, and I'm happy to go through them all if you'd like me to walk through each of these. What I would like to request is to bring in a third party to do a workshop where we can dive into these a little bit more in detail. This is a really high-level overview of how some of these tools work. If you'd like, I'm happy to go through just a brief 2 to 3 bullets on each one for this meeting, but I think it'd be great to have someone come in that's more of an expert in how these works and how to get them set up, so we make sure we do our due diligence and understanding how they work before we decide if it's something we even want to explore as a city.
Since this meeting got a lot shorter than expected, sure. I think it would be a great use of time if you could sure. go through and briefly just touch on each of them, and then I know that I personally would be super interested in having a workshop or some sort of meeting, whether it's full council or just a couple of us who want to like report back.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in hearing about like different options and how they could work for us.
And then I got to hear a presentation the other day, and it addressed a lot of the concerns that I had towards that type of a thing. So I think it would be certainly beneficial for council to hear. So.
Well, I'll just run through these just in really high-level overview, especially for those sitting in the audience, they can understand it too. So the first one I mentioned is urban renewal districts. If you look across the state, it's probably one of the most widely used tools for economic development purposes if you're trying to help get infrastructure to sites. That's what it was created for. There's over 40 cities with urban renewal agencies in Idaho. And urban renewal agencies can work by having council members as part of that. They just can't be the majority of the commissioners appointed to an agency. You basically set it up, an urban renewal agency, which we already have one established in code. You would just need to appoint commissioners to manage that agency. Those agency commissioners help put together kind of a plan of action on what needs to happen moving forward. So a number of different things. Basically, what happens when you establish a URD or an urban renewal district is you take an area that you define, and it basically freezes the tax assessment value. So let's say you've got a piece of property that's worth $100,000. In the assessment value, take a snapshot that it's worth $100,000 there, and then every year, the increment of that value. So let's say you attract a commercial user to go on that site, and it becomes worth $1 million. So now in the $900,000 of increment, the taxes on that increment get used to go back into the urban renewal district to fund infrastructure projects within that district. That's a really high-level overview of kind of how it works. But it's not increasing taxes. It's not adding an additional tax to any of those property owners. It's just taking the increment of property tax values as they go up. So that's kind of how the tool's funded. In order to establish one, you basically would first do a blight study or taking an evaluation of different sites and understanding what the challenges are with putting an infrastructure in place. And once you've done that study, if it's deemed worthy to move forward, then you would put together a draft plan area and a budget of what you'd like to accomplish within that plan. You set a time frame, and there's limitations for how long those districts can run. Typically, they run about 20 years. If you achieve all the objectives you want to achieve within 10 years, you could certainly close the district down. Then that money gets to go back to the other taxing entities. So the other taxing entities, too, so on that $100,000 worth of value, the money continues being paid out to those taxing entities like it would have been for the first amount up to that frozen value. The additional is what goes back into the urban renewal district. So that's a really high level of how that one works.
And if this is too complicated a question, yep, and you want to just say,
go ahead,
save it for the workshop, feel free to do that. But if you can answer it, great. Are all taxing entities treated the same, stated differently? Would schools receive less money still from that, or are there certain taxing entities that are, for lack of a better word, exempt from the limitations placed by an urban renewal district?
Great question. So the way that it works is, as you define the district, typically it's for an area that's otherwise undevelopable. So if not for creating an urban renewal district, that area is unlikely to receive new developments coming in. So the property values of those sites probably wouldn't increase otherwise. So, yes, if the value goes from $100,000 up to $1 million, the taxing entities wouldn't get the additional increment, just the urban renewal district would, until the urban renewal district was done. Then it would get folded back into those agencies. Ultimately, what happens is you create an increase in property values for all the properties in the district that you define, so that at the end you have higher property values that go back to the school districts. But for the time that you've got the urban renewal district in place, they wouldn't receive the increment. But they would receive the original amount.
Okay, and that applies, just to be extra clear, for all taxing entities, so even like the fire district and ACHD, everybody?
Yep, I believe so.
Okay.
It doesn't apply to impact fees, though.
Okay, okay. Oh, that's good. Okay, thank you.
Unless I'm wrong, Bill, if you have any corrections.
Excuse me, I didn't catch the last what you said.
It doesn't apply to impact fees, so if there is an impact fee in place, it would still apply?
They're for two different things. Impact fees are strictly for new construction based on the capital improvement plan.
Sure.
The tax increment allocation area does, it freezes assessed value. The urban renewal district gets the revenue from the increased assessed value of taxable property for the length of period of the urban renewal district and the plan. Now, the plan can include improvements for schools and other items for government agencies who are being losing revenue. And I know in Caldwell I represent some now, which we have an agreement with the urban renewal district as part of their plan for certain projects, like Canyon 4 is going to build a bridge over the Boise River where the old Highway 30 crossed. We also, for the school district, the Caldwell High School addition that was built a year or two ago was with urban renewal money. The plan is, I think, it's hugely important. But I know Caldwell used it primarily for infrastructure and economic development. That was its primary goal.
There's also another couple points to point out with that, too, is some cities have gotten a little bit more heat for how they've used urban renewal districts and funding. Whether they've used it for public infrastructure or for public buildings, there's been some challenges on urban renewal from the state on that. That's why the plan is so important. So we could be very, if we decided to move forward with doing something like this after we explored it a little bit more, we could be very diligent about what we would include and what we wouldn't include. We could say it's only for the purpose of building infrastructure, or it's only for the purpose of, here's the specific project we want to fund with an urban rural district. We can get pretty specific on what we'd want to include, and then you can add some caveats that, let you expand it to fit the project needs if something comes forward too. So that's really high-level overview, and again, I'd love to get into it more in a workshop setting where we can ask a lot more detailed questions. But I'll move on to the other two just really briefly. So another tool that's out there is a business improvement district. It's something that frequently a lot of downtowns use to do revitalization. So Destination Caldwell has one. Idaho Falls has one for their downtown. The Downtown Boise Association uses one. And basically you can help with building parking facilities, physical improvement of public spaces, promotion of public events, different things related to downtown growth is basically what it's used for. Kind of works a little bit similar. You describe boundaries of a proposed district. The main difference is that you collect fees basically from the property owners in that district to help pay for the expenses of that district. It's a really high level of how that works. So they pay fees for the improvements. There's about 1,000 BIDs in the United States. There's about 6 in Idaho. So it is a tool that's utilized, but not as frequently. So certainly another one to keep in mind. Community infrastructure districts are the last one that I have on this list. There's two good examples of how they've been used in the community, Harris Ranch being one of those and Avamore being another one. They're typically great ways to help finance projects that are mixed-use communities. So if you've got a big mixed-use project coming in that wants to do several different kinds of housing, maybe a couple pieces of commercial, and they've got some infrastructure challenges, it can help them with the financing side of it. And basically they put together a bond, and that bond obligation gets passed back on to those property owners that are going to benefit from the development. So again, that's really high level, probably similar to how the LID kind of process would work too. That's pretty similar for a CID. Overall, just some high level notes. Urban renewal probably gives the most flexibility on the size of a region that can be defined and the way that funds can be used. It also puts public involvement into the process because you've got to have a public hearing process to go through to set up the steps for it. So you'd have to have a public workshop, understand how the tools work, put together the blight study, gather public input on whether or not you want to move forward with establishing a district. Even if the urban renewal agency meets separately and says this is a plan we want to go through with, it still has to go through public process to be approved before it gets adopted. So just a couple notes on that. Business improvement could be something good to consider for downtown CUNA enhancements if we want to do some facade improvements, if we want to do some programming, if we want to help kind of put a revitalization effort on some of those projects. Certainly something good to keep in mind. And then community infrastructure districts are less often used in Idaho, but can be a good option if you want to do more of the master plan or mixed-use communities. So that's kind of a high-level, really fast and furious update. But again, I would love your permission to move forward with finding a couple of third parties that might be able to come in and do a workshop presentation for us that we can dive into.
I have three comments.
Okay.
Number one, can you please email me a copy of this, because I see there's nice hyperlinks throughout,
yep,
and I would like to be able to explore further.
I will absolutely do that.
Number two, I know that this will be posted somewhere because it's part of the record, but yeah, if we could get this posted, like, just in case people want to start learning a little bit about it and see if they're interested, whatever, in case citizens want to learn more. And then my third question is the biggest one, and that is, as you're looking into setting up a workshop, can we consider the logistics for the possibility of video recording that, just because I imagine there might be public interest in attending the workshop, but for people who can't attend or want to learn on their own, especially if we're considering moving forward with any of these after the workshop, I think it'd be really useful for them to be able to hear from the expert as well, or experts, just to learn more about, because some of these, you know, you always hear the horror stories, you don't necessarily hear the good stuff, and so it can be really scary. You know, depending on what we're looking at, folks always want to know how it's going to potentially impact them and how it works and that sort of thing. So that would be my only ask, especially if we're like having to pay for somebody to come in and provide education, just that included in that price would be the idea that we are going to be recording it and posting it on our website for public consumption.
Yeah, you bet. And I'm there's a lot of people who are very knowledgeable in urban renewal. Elon Burke has come up as someone that a lot of folks use throughout Idaho, so I would probably reach out to them, or JUB has done quite a few urban renewal districts too. There's a few different groups I'd reach out to and get some prices and see if maybe they'd even be willing to come in just to share some information with us without cost too. So
okay.
I'll see what options are out there for us.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Questions for Lisa?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Third reading and consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-05 and ordinance of the City Council of Kuna, Idaho, amending Title I, Chapter 6, Section 8, entitled Public Hearing Rules of Procedure of the Kuna City Code, providing for clarification on public hearing rules of procedure, establishing testimony and time limits, regulating the presentation of documents and other forms of physical evidence, amending the recognized public hearing motions, clarifying conflict of interest procedures, and providing for an effective date and publication. This is the third reading, so.
I just have one edit that I just noticed, and that is in the introductory language that Joe just read. On the second to last bullet, where it says clarifying conflict of interest procedures, there's an extra E in the word procedures. So I would just ask that that be corrected. It's procedures.
Or add another E.
Double them up through the whole thing so we're consistent. I don't remember seeing that before. Maybe it was there and I just missed it the last time. But, okay, we had had this go for three readings because, as Councilman Cardoza noted, it dealt with public access to City Council and providing information and that sort of thing. So now that we've hit the third reading and we haven't had any feedback or any suggestions for things we need changed, so I do move that we approve Ordinance 2019-05.
Second.
With the change that I noted, sorry.
Second stands.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2019-05 with the removal of the second E from the word procedure. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Chris, would you poll the council?
Excuse me. Council Member Cardoza?
Aye.
Council Member Christensen?
Aye.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2019-05.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance number 2019-05. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Item B is consideration to approve Ordinance number 2019-08. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Kuna making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the Kuna Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Michael Jordan Robinson and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law and directing the city engineer to provide notice of this ordinance to the New York Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map and providing an effective date. And this is just the inclusion of another property so I don't know that it's anything we need to run through all three readings.
Okay. I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2019-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance number 2019-08. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2019-08.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2019-08. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. We do have, we have mayor and council announcements. Is there anything that council wants to announce? Chris?
I just want to let council know probably we have training next week, and then I think the week after that the new website will roll out, or the updated website.
Wonderful.
Thank you. I will let you know and send you a link when we're able to send it.
Perfect.
Bob.
Mayor and Council, I just wanted to let you guys know that the rate study is complete. hoping to roll that out to Council in the next few meetings. We just got to get through it and digest it all and go through the nuts and bolts of it. But just want to give you an update that that's done and should be coming in front of you very soon.
And just to refresh recollections, this was the thing that you guys had been working on and that Greg and I came in for like a special meeting about to make our recommendations about dialing in the specifics of what we thought we'd like to see for presentation to full council.
Yes.
Perfect.
Very good. Anything further?
I have one item.
Yes, go ahead.
Bobby, do you think it would be possible for us to get, I guess, to plan for a standing splash pad update for the first meeting each month until it's happening, just so we can stay abreast of what's going on and that sort of thing?
Yes, I will do a memo every month and kind of give you guys an update.
Okay. If you want to do a memo, that's cool. Otherwise, we can just plan that during mayor council announcements, like, okay, we get an update. Like, it can just be verbal if that's easier.
Okay. Yeah, either way is fine.
Okay, perfect.
Cool.
Thank you. I just want to give you that heads up so you could plan for it, and I'm not putting you on the spot.
I like being put on the spot.
Duly noted.
All right.
Careful what you wish for.
Mr. Gigray.
Bill Gigray, city attorney, mayor, and council. I do a legislative report if you want to hear that.
Okay.
No? They're groaning over.
Rude.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, Bill Gigray, City Attorney, I kind of standardly with the districts that I represent try to provide a legislative update as we move through the season, because sometimes there are things that are going on up there that are of importance. The ones that I will report on are the ones that I think affect all property taxing districts and then those that affect cities. And then I'll run through these. House Bill 15, which was introduced very early in the session and has been signed and become and will come into law, has to do with the public records law. It assured that you cannot charge sales tax for the production of records, transcripts, deeds, and so on. Evidently, there were some cities or some agencies charging sales tax when they imposed a bill for responding to a public records request. Even though Alex was in support of this, I know I'm teasing, that signed into law, and so we don't have to worry about that. I've never seen that issue raised before. We watched House Bill 40. This has to do with professional service contracts for architects, engineers, and landscape architects and construction managers. As you know, the law requires if you're going to incur over $25,000 in anticipated expense, you have to go through a request for qualifications process where you first identify the qualifications. Then you determine, based on notice and so on, who's first, second, third, and then you go to negotiate with the highest and so on and so forth. Well, this bill proposed to eliminate any reference to firms' fees, rates, or overhead in the evaluation of their qualification process, not in the negotiation of the contract. That made it to Commerce and Human Resources Committee at the end of January, but it hasn't come out. I don't think it'll be enacted, but we may see something like this again next year. That's another reason we track some of these. We say, well, it didn't go this year, but this is likely to come back the following year. House Bill 41 This, in my mind, was a terrible piece of legislation. It proposed a new Idaho Code section which would have prohibited severance pay with any public employee upon termination. This, I think, would severely hamper any government agency where you have a situation where the elected officials are having trouble with some of the administrators. It happens from time to time in all agencies. It's an option out there. I think it saves a lot of unwanted litigation. Well, this got printed. It went to Commerce and Human Resources, and it stayed there, and I hope it does stay there. We'll watch and see if this comes back next year. I don't think it'll pass this year. House Bill 87, this added an exemption on property tax for harvest production of raw agricultural commodities, including on-farm storage and commodities. I don't know that that'll affect your taxable value much in the city. It could affect some more rural areas. That was signed by the governor and will become law. House Bill 103, and this is signed by the governor and became law, and it will affect the city. If you ever do a special levy election, you will now have to include on the ballot a notation of the cost per 100,000 in taxable value that the levy will impose. I know that we have similar requirements for certain bond elections. We did not have it for special levy elections, but that has been signed by the governor and will become law. House Bill 113, this affects wage claims, and since the city has employees and wages, it extends the time period in which you can bring a wage claim from 6 months to 12. This elongates the statute, and it was signed by the governor yesterday, so that will become law as well, July 1st. House Bill 129, no, I'm going to skip that one because there's another bill with the same issue. House Bill 160, this has to do with sole source purchasing, and I don't know whether we've been doing any sole source purchasing here. There is an option to do that when there's one unique vendor and you don't have to go through all the bidding process, so you can acquire from that. This bill has passed both houses and went to the governor on the 18th. It eliminates the need to declare an emergency when you go through that process, so that makes it a little bit simpler. So that will become law. House Bill 161, this amends our procurement of personal property involving information technology and allows a notice posting on the agency website in lieu of publication. And that passed the House with a considerable amount of dissent. It was like 44 to 26. It was referred to Senate Local Government February 25th. It hasn't come out of there. I don't think it'll probably make it this year. But we did see a few bills involving legal notices that have hit the legislature this year, so we watch those because that affects things that we need to publish. House Bill 166. This has to do with agencies and official notice and newspaper publications, and it amends some of those provisions of Title 60, Chapter 1. The one item on there is that if the newspaper is publishing online, which newspapers are doing now, any publication has to remain online for 4 weeks after the initial publication. That was referred to State Affairs. It didn't come out. So I don't think that'll become law either, but we may see something like this again next year. The House Bill 193A, that means it was amended. This affects when the State Tax Commission has to notify a taxing district that it is going to disallow an annexation, or in our instance, so let's say we do an annexation ordinance, the legal description is, it's got an error in it. The process is we give it to the recorder at the assessor's office. If they approve it, it goes to the State Tax Commission, then the State Tax Commission is the one that actually maps it and puts it in on the assessment roll for tax purposes. And there have been problems with them delaying their response, saying they won't allow it because of some problem. Say they claim it's a shoestring annexation or something else. This bill would propose to limit the amount of time they can do this to 28 days. It passed the House, and it's referred to Senate local government on the 13th. It's kind of late today, but we'll see whether or not that makes it out. And I know this came from Canyon County because they have more taxing districts than anybody else in the state. We'll see how that goes. Next bill is House Bill 204. This amends the personal property definition, which has been in our law forever, which basically said anything that isn't real property is personal property. Well, now they have additional definitions for tangible and intangible personal property that wasn't there before. I don't think that doesn't affect cities on surplusing, because you really don't have any prohibitions or statutes that govern how you surplus and dispose of personal property you do with real. House Bill 217, this has to do with revenue allocation area legislation, and it proposed that an election would be required if the revenue allocation area and the urban renewal plan proposed a construction or remodel of a municipal building or a multi-purpose sports stadium complex. I wonder why that guy didn't have a clue. And it's been contentious. It passed the House 59-11, but it went to local government. And I think it doesn't look like that. I think they're going to table it. I don't think that will make it through this year. I'm sure urban renewal, we're going to see more on that in the future, though. Next is a bill that was referred and printed on March 6th. This would affect property taxing districts. It would propose a process by which the maximum homestead exemption amount could be modified by the State Tax Commission publishing what the FHFA Housing Index change for Idaho was, could increase the amount of the homestead exemption. I don't think that's going to make it through the legislature. The idea of it, I don't think, as long as you're below your levy limit, that it would affect very much, because I don't think those increases are going to amount to enough of a percentage to affect that. We'll see if this surfaces again next year. Senate Bill 1047, this has to do with cooperative purchasing agreements, and I don't know whether or not we've been involved here in the city. I know I have fire districts and other districts that have been involved in those. You can do that with other government subdivisions of the state of Idaho, but also this bill extends this to associations and may participate in cooperative purchase programs established by associations that offers its goods and services as a result of competitive solicitation. And I know with the fire districts, we've had an entity in Houston, and there's been another one, I believe, in Minneapolis that they wanted to be able to avail. So the idea is if they've bid out a fire truck in Houston, Texas, or somewhere in the country, then you can piggyback off of that bid, and it kind of, you don't have to go through the notice provision. And I think this bill will actually loosen this law up, because there's some requirements now, and we found those entities didn't qualify under existing law. This was signed by the governor on the 11th, so this will become law. We'll try to get that to you so that you may have some additional options with regards to some purchases. Impact fees, House Bill 91. Exemptions from impact fees, or any property taxing district does not pay impact fees. Well, charter schools, they're building a lot of them now, are not property taxing entities. And so they want to be treated like school districts and others. And so that's what this bill proposed. And it was sent to the governor on the 11th. So I think that'll probably become law. Next item for cities. As you know, we've had some bills regarding annexations, and they want to prohibit annexations for land that's devoted to agriculture, even though it's surrounded by a city. That was House Bill 25. It was signed into law and even has an emergency clause. I don't know what was driving that, but so that means even though we have a an enclave in the city, and as long as it meets the statutory definition of devoted to agricultural uses, we would be prohibited from annexing it unless the owner consents. Then you can do it. House Bill 39 had to do with building inspectors, and there were a couple of bills involving that. House Bill 108 is the one that was signed by the governor. The other one got stuck, but basically it has to do with building inspector certifications. You can hire and use one that is not ICC certified building inspector for up to 6 months, as long as as the plans are reviewed and approved by an ICC certified building inspector. And I know that getting building inspectors has been a tough row, and there aren't that many around, but this is designed to allow somebody who may be interning for 6 months, who you could hire, and then as long as they're overseen by somebody, they could perform those duties. That was signed by the governor. Other items that would have to do with House Bill 48, there was a bill proposed to allow to eliminate the state's primacy on regulations over reusable bags and bottles and containers, because the state is saying, well, no, cities can't pass ordinances. And I get a kick out of these, because you can tell that where these bills are headed. If they're headed to Ways and Means, that's the end of the day, and this is one of them that got sent to Ways and Means. The other one that went to Ways and Means was House Bill 50. It was a bill proposing to establish to eliminate the section of Idaho Code that prohibits cities and counties from establishing an ordinance on a minimum wage. That went to Ways and Means. And the other one is House Bill 51, and if you'll remember, Senate Bill 1044 a number of years ago eliminated eminent domain authority for trails, pathways, and greenways, which I even testified against. That was a terrible piece of legislation. It was a legislator out of Pocatello that didn't want the Portneuf River pathway to go by his land in Pocatello, but never mind. Not that they'd ever do any self-serving there.
Because that's inappropriate.
Yes, it is. Well, anyway, that went to Ways and Means as well, which I'm sorry to see. House Bill 92, has to do with land that is enclaved by cities that is devoted to forests. I don't know that in the Treasure Valley that will be a huge concern, but that one somehow was referred to local government. I was just interested that these annexation prohibition bills were popping up over, particularly to try to prohibit land enclave annexation. House Bill 97, this one I think is an important bill to consider. It amends Idaho Code Section 361604, which I'm sure all of you probably read yesterday, mm-hmm. and just kind of keep on the top, maybe in your car. Just mm-hmm. how does that bill? What does that statute provide? Actually, this has to do with immunity, which is granted to a property owner who allows people to access their property for recreational purposes and does not charge the fee. If they do that, then they're not liable unless there, is intentional torts or whatever, and it provides, an incentive to open the ground. Well, this bill provides that that even if that property is leased or by some other agreement with a government entity, as long as the individuals are not charged by the property owner, they still get the immunity. And the reason I bring this up, and this passed the House without objection, it passed the Senate 32-1, and that was on yesterday. So I think that's going to become law, and I think it's a tool that we can use as you develop your green belts and your recreational areas in this community. If there were ever situations where, oh, you had a property owner that was kind of reluctant, but if you entered into a lease agreement with them and said, well, what if we, or we'll just pay you, if you'll, under agreement, open this up for recreational purposes in the community, they would still get this immunity, and they wouldn't. And I think that's one we ought to consider as we go as we look at your recreational and parks areas. We have city annexations. Let's see. This one was House Bill 128. This has to do with the proposal to repeal a current annexation statute at 5222, which is one of the longest, most hard-to-read statutes I think we have in the Idaho Code. It's just a
That's
mess.
Saying something.
Yeah, it is
Idaho
saying
Code
something.
Is terrible.
But you read the federal code, I think it's even worse. I don't mean to offend you.
I didn't read it.
This would prohibit city annexations without the consent of the owner, and the land has to be adjacent to the city, and the city must notify adjacent landowners with required information, and the city must publish notice of intent to annex and two-thirds of the adjacent property owner's consent, and there is a written annexation plan, and these are Plan B. These aren't consent. Consent annexations. These would be any other type of annexation, and then they eliminate the Section C annexations is what this proposed. It was referred to local government in mid-February. It hasn't come out, so I don't that one won't see the light of day, I don't think. But then there's House Bill 130A, which proposes to eliminate shoestring or strip land connection annexation, and it redefines the same as a connection has to be greater, I love this, than a railroad or a highway right-of-way, excluding those rights-of-way that are located immediately adjacent to such land, lots or blocks being proposed for annexation, and that are more than 150 feet wide. This has to do with the shoestring annexation. It's trying to redefine what that is. The Category A annexation for enclave lands from 100 parcels to 50. Now it's 100. They want to reduce it back to 50 parcels. Change in Category 2B annexations to reduce the number of parcels from 100 to 25, and increase the consenting parcel owners from 50% to 60%. Eliminates Category C annexation, adds a prohibition of any annexation of enclave property, modifies the implied consent provision regarding property being served by city water and sewer services, adds 60 days prior written notice by mail to property owners requiring a Category A annexation of enclave properties, and eliminates Category C annexation procedures, adds provisions that parcels of 5 acres or greater devoted to agricultural forest land cannot be annexed. That was passed by the House, referred to local government and taxation on March 13th. I'm hoping that doesn't come out of committee, but we better watch that because that'll change some of the annexation rules. House Bill 131, City Records Classification and Retention. This would propose to amend Idaho Code and some new subdivisions dealing with municipal media recording and law enforcement media recordings with visual and audio, and to have evidentiary value must be delivered to law enforcement. And there were some retention requirements in this bill of those kinds of records. It got filed for a first reading in local government in February, mid-February, and hasn't come out. House Bill 154 regarding sales tax revenue distribution formula for counties and cities. This proposes to provide a new Idaho Code section which defines per capita distribution for cities and counties, and the definition of revenue sharing amends Idaho Code Section 633638, which is concerned with 11.5% of sales tax, which is continuously appropriated and distributed to the revenue sharing account paid in installments of 45% paid to cities and 47.3% to counties, and the other 7.7, which remains the same as it is now, goes to other taxing districts. Now, I don't know in our distributions how that's going to affect. This was referred to revenue and taxation in mid-February. It hasn't come out.
Is it the one that changes the way they calculate the distribution?
I believe it does.
So that one would actually benefit us by a lot. Our distribution rate is pretty low for the city of CUNA because of our growth. The other rates were all set by the population and the sizes of the city. So the thing that it does have a negative impact on is the smaller cities that aren't growing. It will greatly reduce their distribution rates. So.
Well, on this one, it looks like it's stuck in committee in revenue and tax, and it doesn't. There's no indication it's moved out of there, so I don't see how that's going to make it this year. Do you know, is the Association of Idaho Cities pushing this, or is there a lot of dissension, so it's kind of neutral? Or
oddly enough, on that one with the Association of Idaho Cities, some of the bigger cities that would benefit the very most are the ones that are hesitant to do anything with that because they know what impact it'll have on the smaller cities. So I don't think there's a real push to make that happen. There are some cities that are obviously really wanting to do that, but
okay. The House Bill 229, provides and amends the Idaho Code for the adoption of the National Electrical Code, a 2017 edition. We may want to take a look at our ordinances to see if we need to update this. I don't know that it'll make it out. We'll see whether that does. Senate Bill 1040 would have been of concern. This has to do with the liquor law, and Jim Rice, I think, is chairing the committee and had proposed completely rewriting our liquor law, probably eliminate some of the restrictions on licenses and so on, but that is still in state affairs, and I don't think it's come back out again. I'm not aware that it hasn't seen anything in the paper. We'll watch that because that could affect all your liquor ordinances. And the other bills that I'd report on that involve cities, you don't have a fire department, so you don't get into labor negotiations, so I will not labor this any further with that. And I would stand for questions.
That was riveting.
I'll bet. There's some years it is.
That's true. Thank you. Any questions for Bill?
No, I did think it was interesting. Thank you.
it's good. Thank you very much. I watch a lot of those very closely. So.
Yeah, I like to do this kind of toward the end of the legislative season. It keeps me focused on the things we need to do in order to update our ordinances, whatever we do.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks
very much. Anything else? If not, we need to adjourn to an executive session, and I don't believe we need item E anymore.
Okay.
So just under F, and we will need Bob and Attorney Gigray. Anybody else?
Lisa volunteered to take notes for us.
Okay, and Lisa.
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code Section 74206F to communicate with legal counsel for the public agency to discuss the legal ramifications of and legal options for pending litigation or controversies not yet being litigated but imminently likely to be litigated.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to adjourn to the executive session pursuant to Idaho Code Section 74-206. 1 and F. Is there any further discussion?
Poll.
Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And the motion carries. Thank you. Bill, thank you for coming tonight.